So I would like to thank the organizers for giving me a possibility to present our research here. And my talk will be on geometry, and I will talk about some conformal models in discrete differential geometry. Some of them have been investigated already from the point of view of mathematical physics, and they are quite popular nowadays. Some of them are still new, and I think, well, that they are integrable, and it's important to look at them from the point of view, from the physical point of view. So, but you see, well, the title is sort of difficult, yeah, so because discrete differential geometry is a part of that title, and maybe I should say a few words about what is this, yeah? So what is discrete differential geometry? So, the aim of discrete differential geometry is quite natural, is development of discrete equivalence of the geometric notions and methods of differential geometry. There is a huge classical theory, very famous, mathematicians, almost all famous mathematicians have contributed into the development of this part of mathematics. And, well, what one wants to do, well, one wants to discretize this. So then the classical differential geometry should appear as a limit of refinements of the discretization. Well, very natural setup and a very difficult problem. So, of course, one can suggest many different discretizations for the same smooth model, and then the question, which discretization is the best one? So here, well, this community of people who are doing discrete differential geometry consists of geometers, mathematicians, but also people who are interested in computer science. And, of course, the interests are rather different. So from the point of view of a mathematician, the best discretization is the one where you preserve the fundamental properties of the model, and from the point of view of a person who is doing application, this is, in this setup, it's the best approximation. So you get your smooth picture with as few vertices as possible. So just a few messages about discrete differential geometry and how we understand that is the first message is that one is looking for a discretization of the whole theory and not just the equations. So the discrete differential, the discrete theory one is aiming at is as rich as the corresponding smooth theory and even richer because, well, some additional structures appear and which disappear in the smooth limit. There are some remarkable phenomena which happen in this discretization. For example, some classical results in differential geometry appear as incidence theorems of projective geometry. That's what is new and was not known to classics. And also, well, maybe I should point out the next point here. So this classical theory is full of famous existence theorems, which are purely existence theorems, so which are not constructive. So something exists and is unique, and you have no idea how to construct it. These problems, of course, appear also in discrete differential geometry, but then if the discretization is intelligent and preserves structures, then the problem sometimes becomes simpler because instead of infinite dimensional functional spaces, you are dealing with finite dimensional spaces where you don't have to fight with difficult problems in functional analysis. And then, last but not least, is that this is important for applications, and I shouldn't probably tell that much about applications in computer graphics because we understand that all surfaces we see in the screen of our computer are actually discrete surfaces, and that's why they belong to this field, discrete differential geometry. But also there are now real applications in architecture, and also the reason why I'm here is that same models appear in physics, and that's also an important interaction. So today I will present you several models in discrete differential geometry which are conformal models. So what we will do, we will discretize complex analysis and conformal metrics. So this has to do with the theory of circle packings and circle patterns. That's what I will try to explain you in detail. And then we will look at integrable circle patterns, and after that consider conformal equivalent simplicial matrices. So we will introduce conformal equivalence for the class of discrete metrics, and the hyperbolic geometry will play an important role here. So let me start with these two pictures. So in this picture we see a circle packing. All circles have different radii. And here we see a circle pattern. So, and both these pictures can be treated as a discretization of complex analysis. So I think the easiest way to explain this is here. For example, if you what is a conformal map from C to C? It should satisfy two conditions. Yeah? So first of all, the partial derivative with respect to X and Y should be of the same absolute value, and also the corresponding vectors should be orthogonal. So if you try to put this on the lattice, then at each vertex of the lattice, then of course you end up with a square lattice, and this is not that interesting. So, but the next natural idea is just to put these two different conditions to two different sublattices, as we do here. This means that at blue vertices, you have this blue condition that all the edges meeting at the blue vertex have the same length, and this means that you have a circle through these four vertices with through four green vertices with the center at the blue vertex. And also this orthogonality condition means that the two lines which intersect at the green vertex intersect orthogonally. And this means that you have orthogonally intersecting circles. So you have a circle pattern of orthogonally intersecting circles. So if you take here, a sublattice of, take all on only half of these circles, you end up with a circle packing. And that's a notion I would like to start with. A circle packing, it's just a configuration of circular disks, which may touch but not overlap. So this is an example of a triangulation, and given such a circle packing, we associate this contact graph to this circle packing just by connecting the centers of the circles. So, the combinatorics will play an important role in my talk, and this will not be just a combinatoric of the square grid. It can be quite generic. So here we are dealing with general triangulation. So given a circle packing, we have a contact graph. And now let us come to the smooth theory. An important theorem is the Riemann mapping theory, which says that any simply connected domain in a complex plane is conformally equivalent to the unit disk. So that's Riemann mapping theorem. And this mapping, F, to the unit disk is essentially unique, as unique as it can be. It is unique up to a Möbius transformation that preserves the unit disk. Okay, so now let me show you a discrete version of this theorem, which is due to Thurston. That was his idea that the Riemann mapping can be approximated using circle packings. So here to the right and to the left, you see two different domains. Here it's a round disk. So here it's simply connected domain. And you have circles here which have equal radii and circles which have here different radii. So, but the combinatorics of circles here and here is the same. Here you have an extra condition that the circles lying on the boundary, which correspond to the circles lying on the boundary here, touch this unit disk. In a way, you obtain a circle packing not on the disk, but on the sphere, if you just consider the corresponding Riemann sphere, yeah? Taking, compactifying the, your complex plane at infinity. So I will explain you later that such a circle packing is unique under this condition, also as unique as it can be, up to Möbius transformation. And in this way, we obtain a map from this domain to this disk. For example, this black circle here corresponds to this black circle here. And so you can, the next circle here corresponds to this circle, next circle here. Oh, it's difficult to point out. So you can imagine what happens if we refine this triangulation and put circles of small radii here. So, and this is a mathematical result due to Rodin and Sullivan that this mapping converges to the Riemann mapping. So it's, essentially a setup of discrete differential geometry. You have a mathematical theorem on the discrete level, and you have this proof of convergence, and as a corollary, you obtain a classical theorem in complex analysis. Okay, so that was a story about circle packings, and now we will generalize a little bit. So to the notion of circle patterns, that's what we see here. Imagine you have these black points, and then you put the disks, which are as large as possible, but which are still empty, which do not include these black points. Then you come to a cell decomposition of a plane, which is shown here, which is called a Delaunay decomposition. Yeah. So, for example, ignore these white points here. They're just the centers of these disks. And consider only the black points. Yeah. Then you have this cell decomposition shown here, and this is a unique decomposition. So if you now take these circles, then you have an example of a circle pattern. And actually, this is a general circle pattern which can be described this way. Okay, so that's what we understand as a circle pattern. And now this relation between circle patterns and circle packings. Here in this picture, you see a circle pattern. If you consider both, these black circles and dotted circles. But on the other hand, you see a pair of circle packings comprised by black and dotted circles, which intersect orthogonally. The mathematical setup is the following. The contact graphs of these two circle packings, which you see here of this pair, are dual cell decompositions, and the circles intersect orthogonally at their common intersection points. Yeah, here, for example, you have four circles, two touching pairs, and they intersect orthogonally. In the case of a triangulation, the second packing exists automatically, and then we are at the circle packing. So now, mathematical theorem. As I said, the combinatorics is arbitrary, almost arbitrary. So you can consider every polytopole cell decomposition. So, strongly regular means that, two cells intersect only in one cell. Imagine a polyhedron, yeah? So that's a regular, that's a strongly regular cell decomposition. So you don't have identifications on the boundary of the cells, and you don't have loops and so on. So this is not allowed. So, but the, up to this, the combinatorics can be arbitrary. And then there exists a pair of orthogonally intersecting circle packings, as I have explained, as you see here. And this pair of circle packings is unique up to Möbius transformation. So as unique as it can be. So, and this is a famous theorem by Andreas Thorsen, and in this setup is due to Schramm. Then, if you just take these circles and consider the cones which touch your sphere along these circles, then you obtain, and consider the tips of these cones, then you obtain a polygon, a polyhedra, with the vertices lying outside the sphere and with all the edges touching the sphere. So, for example, here you see this circle packing on the sphere, and the tips of the vertices of the polyhedron are shown here in yellow. Yeah? So that's a typical Kirby polyhedron. And the condition is that all the edges, like this edge, touch a sphere. And the claim is that for any combinatorics, for any cell decomposition of the sphere, there exists a unique Kirby polyhedron. There exists a unique geometric realization with touching edges. Okay, so now about discrete conformal maps. So what one understands, what one sees as a discrete conformal map. So a discrete conformal map is a pair of circle patterns. You remember we had previously a pair of circle packings with the same combinatorics, and we have interpreted this pair as a discrete conformal mapping which approximates the Riemann mapping theorem. The, approximates the Riemann mapping to the unit disk if you refine your combinatorics. So now it's a little bit more general notion. Instead of packings, we are considering patterns. One considers just a pair of them, and the condition is that the combinatorics should be the same. That's a quite natural condition. And the second condition is that the intersection angles between these circles also should be the same. This is this conformality condition. So here you see three images of with the same combinatorics and with the same intersection angles. I think that all of them are pi over 3. Yeah, so 60 degrees. Yeah. So you see that you still have some flexibility, but on the other hand, these structures are as rigid as structures in complex analysis, so they are global. Why this is a natural notion and why it's a natural interpretation? What happens at the centers? So you have a sort of lens distortion because the change, the radius of the circles change, and they do not depend on direction. So that's a conformal change. And at the intersection points, angles are preserved, and this is also a conformality condition. So now, okay, discrete conformal maps. That's what we will investigate. So now we are coming closer to analytical description. I'm, of course, going to write a couple of formulas. Now the problem is the following. You have a cell decomposition of a surface. So that's the combinatorics which one has, yeah? And also, these two circles, they're supposed to correspond to two different cells of your cell decomposition. They have this, on the cell you have an edge, yeah? Two faces intersect along an edge. And there is an intersection angle, theta, which is associated to this edge of on your combinatorics. So these are your combinatorial data. The cell decomposition of a surface, the combinatorics, and also an intersection angle to each interior edge. Okay? So these are the data. And then the question is to find the corresponding Delaunay decomposition with circle intersecting at the prescribed angles. So we see, for example, here three different solutions to the same problem. This is the same combinatorics, the same intersection angles, and but different boundary conditions. Yeah. So, well, two natural angles which one can introduce here are this angle theta. So these are the radii from the centers to the intersection point of these circles, and theta star is the angle between the tangent lines at the meeting point. So, which is just a complementary angle to theta. So, thetas are given to us. So, now, what will be an analytic formulation of the problem? So, here again, we see the same two circles, but with a little bit more angles introduced. This angle theta E is associated to this edge. And this is just an edge combinatorially. This is an edge of our cell decomposition. So this angle is given to us. So how are we going to describe our circle pattern? So provided we know all the radii of all the circles, then we can reconstruct the circle pattern. This is sort of clear because if you know the radii, and you know the intersection angle, this is fixed from the very beginning, then you can reconstruct the whole circle pattern just by adding these disks, the size of which you know exactly. Yeah. Okay, so then analytically, the main problem is to find this radii. So you have one radius per face, and face is this face of this cell decomposition. Now we don't know this radii. We are going to find them. These are the radii of two neighboring circles. Let us assume you know them. Yeah. So they are these R's. Then this angle theta E, phi E, shown here, is given by an explicit formula. That's the formula. So you know these two radii. And you know this angle, it's easy to compute this angle. Yeah? So that will be a different angle, of course, because you have to interchange the R's. So it is given in terms of this radius, of these two radii, and in terms of this intersection angle of the circles. So what is the problem here? The problem is that if you go around this vertex, then the corresponding vector, the corresponding angles phis should sum up to 2 pi. Yeah? This 2 phi, the sum of 2 phi is 2 pi. So these closeness conditions. So you start with a disk, you know, and then you just add, the circles which are surrounding this disk, and it should close up. So, and this is exactly this closeness condition. Yeah, which is shown here, like this, yeah? So you sum with respect to all the edges E, which are associated to this circle. Okay, this is our equation, and R's are our variables. So you have a rather complicated equation, but maybe you can recognize an equation which you have seen, maybe in some special cases. Here, the combinatorics is arbitrary. But if you take sort of square grid, well, and specialize the combinatorics, that will be, for example, an equation for beta ansatz. Yeah? So difficult to solve, but what helps is that this equation is a variational equation, and one can write down the variational principle for this. Yeah? So the variational principle is as follows, and then I hope that you will enjoy some formulas. So instead of using the radii, we are using the logarithmic radii, and then we introduce such a circle pattern functional. So this functional is a function of all these logarithmic radii. So there are as many of them as we have circles. And this is an explicit formula. Here we have rho, thetas are fixed, so this is a simple part of the functional. And here you have a dilogarithm, and it depends on the difference of two rows, which of two neighboring circles. And you sum with respect to all the edges of your cell decomposition, which you know. Yeah, so that's the functional. So this is a formula for the dilogarithm, you all know. And then it's, well, it's just a rather simple computation. When you differentiate this S with respect to one of these rows, you are changing just one radius, one logarithmic radius of one of your circles. Then the result is this term, and this is zero if and only if this condition is satisfied. Yeah? So this is a Lagrangian for our problem. Okay, so, and the remarkable fact about this Lagrangian is the following, that this Lagrangian is convex. So, and this is, of course, a great property, because then you can use it to prove mathematical theorems, and also you can use it to construct these circle patterns. So, the critical points of S are the solutions of the closure condition, and this S is convex. So the convexity of S immediately implies the uniqueness and existence, existence is a little bit more difficult if you are dealing with arbitrary combinatorics. And, I should say that there are some other variational principles, and they are rather closely related. And this is a constructive method. Boundary conditions can be implemented. So that's really a tool to do mathematics and numerics here. Up to now, our combinatorics was arbitrary. Although we have these remarkable facts about existence and uniqueness, the system cannot be treated as an integrable system in this general setup. So to obtain an integrable system, one should specialize the combinatorics a little bit. So let us introduce the notion of quad graph. It's just a quadrilateral cell decomposition. You see such a decomposition here. And this is very much related to these pictures we have seen in the previous talk with the Young-Baxter equation. So imagine you have these lines, yeah? So that's what Pajanov told us. You have some special properties which will be also important here in this integrability picture. So we consider rhombic quad graphs. This is also a restriction of the combinatorics. So this means that there should be a rhombic representation in R2 of this graph. And one can really describe this explicitly, this combinatorics. So, and then, if you have this realization of your quad graph in the plane, then just take these edges, and of course this alpha vector, which is a complex number, is constant along this blue line. Yeah. So, and then at each line you have this parameter alpha. Yeah? So now we are in Bajanov setup. Okay, now what class of circle patterns is described by integrable systems, which of them are integrable? So again, circle patterns are described by this combinatorial data, well, this cell decomposition, and intersection angles. So, okay, and now the statement is that combinatorial data and intersection angles belong to an integrable circle pattern if and only if they admit an isoradial realization. So you have a rhombic quad graph, and a rhombic realization gives you these alphas, which are unitary, and these alphas gives you then give you then the intersection angles of the corresponding circles. Look here again, yeah? So the picture we see here consists of the centers and of the intersection points of these circles, yeah? So that's a quadrilateral here, and it's not a rhombus because the sizes of these two circles are different. But if they are the same, you get a rhombus. And that's a picture here. Yeah? So, and if you have such a picture, then of course you immediately get here circles, and the circles will intersect with some angles. So the claim is that this is exactly the case when you have an integrable system. And then, and this is exactly the formulation here. An isoradial realization means the rhombic quad graph. All the circles have the same size, and the corresponding intersection angles are preserved. Okay, so analytically, such integrable circle patterns are described, for example, by Hirota equation, which was also shown in the talk by Bajanov. The geometrically, these variables W describe as the radii of these circles, and at the blue points, they are rotation angles. So here you have real values, real positive values, and at the blue points, you have unitary values. And that's the equation behind this. So, well, quantization, well, you've seen this also a little bit in Bajanov's talk, is due to Fadeev-Volkov and Bajanov, Mangazeev, Sergeyev. That's a new paper on the quantization of this model. So, okay, so here we see that it's exactly the interplay between discrete differential geometry and mathematical physics. The same model appears quite naturally in both, and it's very interesting. Yeah. Just let me show you one image to show you, well, this integrable circle pattern. And here the result is the following. So you see the combinatorics is quite simple. All circles here have four neighbors. Yeah, so they are different size, but they all have four neighbors. And only one circle here in the middle have five neighbors. So if you would like to construct an infinite circle pattern with these combinatorics, one has five neighbors and all other have four neighbors, and it should be embedded, so this disk will not overlap, then it's a unique one, which you see here. It can be continued, and it is described by an integrable system, which is, in this case, discrete Penleve equation, some separatrix solution to this discrete Penleve equation. So that's, again, how these two theories interact. Well, let me come to the second part of my talk, and I will explain you also a different description for these conformal maps. So that's a smooth theory. You have a conformal metric, and this means that this conformal mapping from a surface, if you want, to a plane, should preserve angles. And this means that the metric is scaled, and the scaling is independent of direction. So in the small, it's like similarity transformations, which are in different for different points on your surface. So, and then two Riemannian metrics on a smooth manifold, that's a more general setup, called conformally invariant, if they differ by such a factor, and this is a function. If you would look at the formula for the corresponding Gaussian curvatures, then the Gaussian curvature of the new metric, this K tilde, is given by this expression, where delta is the Laplace-Beltrami operator of the metric G. And then, well, an interesting problem, which can be seen as a mapping problem, so you would like to project your surface conformally to a plane, is given the surface, it's two-dimensional manifold, M with the metric G, find conformally equivalent flat metric with the curvature zero, G tilde. Then the equation which is responsible for this is the Poisson equation. Yeah? So this one. Yeah? So K tilde is zero. Now, how one can formulate this in the discrete setup? The formulation is rather straightforward. So you have an abstract surface triangulation, vertices, edges, and triangles. And also you have a discrete metric. And this discrete metric is nothing else but the length of all these edges. So to each edge, you have a function L, which is positive. Moreover, of course, they should satisfy the triangle inequalities. Yeah? And that's it. Yeah, that's a metric on an abstract discrete surface. Now we introduce an important notion which such two metrics we treat as conformally equivalent. So, and the notion is as follows. You take an edge and, you have a function which is defined at the vertices of your surface. And an elementary transformation, the conformal transformation of the length is written here. You have your old length of this edge, L, and the new length, L tilde, is L multiplied by the value of this function coming from two neighboring vertices, from here and from here. So you have a sort of dilatation coming from this vertex and also dilatation coming from this vertex. And this is the formula for all edges. So that's a definition. So such two metrics are conformally equivalent. So now again, we come to different variables, just taking logarithms of all these lengths and all these weights use. And so we obtain the following linear transformation for the logarithmic lengths. What is preserved by such a transformation? For interior edges, define the length cross ratio. So for this edge, we just take this length, divide by this length, times this length, divide by this length, and this is a cross ratio. This is a real number, yeah? A real positive number, actually. Yeah? So for such conformally equivalent metrics, which we have introduced right now, they are equal, yeah? These cross ratios. And then, if you now you have these cross ratios associated to all the edges of your surface, and you take a star on your surface, go around once, then the product of these cross ratios is automatically one, and the discrete conformal structure is natural to define. There's equivalence class of discrete metrics, and this equivalence class we have defined right now, and these can be parameterized by this cross ratio, provided they satisfy this condition for all stars. If M is closed, compact, and of genus G, then the dimension of this space of the conformal structure is clearly the number of the edges, because you have lengths, minus the number of the vertices, because you have these constraints at the vertices. Yeah. So, and if you do this computation, then you get 6g minus 6 plus twice the number of vertices, and this is the dimension of the Teichmuller space of genus G with n punctures. So you have a genus G surface, and these vertices on your surface you can treat as punctures. Okay, now the next property is that this is conformally invariant, it's Möbius invariant. If you apply a Möbius transformation, then the cross ratios are preserved. So these are two different images, but they have a Möbius transformation in between, and they have the same cross ratios. That's sort of clear because the cross ratio is invariant with respect to Möbius transformation of the ambient space, yeah, of Rn, and n is at least 3 here. And also, now let us introduce some formulas, and I will then formulate the result. So, if you have length, then of course you can write down immediately the formula for this angle. Yeah, the Euclidean triangle, Euclidean angle, that's the formula. So, angle sum around the vertex I is just this sum. And the curvature is defined as 2 pi minus this angle. So it's sort of angle defect. So the sum of all these angles, that's the curvature. And what you would like to do now, you would like to apply this conformal transformation of the metric I have defined just to make this planar, for example, to get the curvature equal to zero. So that's a discrete mapping theorem. Given a mesh, the metric, and desired angle sums. So these desired angle sums are these thetas, yeah? So for example, they are typically 2 pi, yeah? So if you would like to get a flat metric. Find conformal equivalent metric, L tilde, with this prescribed, with these desired angle sums. So, the natural choice for the interior vertices is 2 pi. Maybe you would like to have some conline singularities, then it's different, yeah? So again, we have a non-linear equations for this vector, for these values ui. These are these conformal factors which we originally introduced here. Yeah, this. That's what we are looking for. Okay, and now, again, it's a variational problem, and it's due to Boris Springborn, who has found this functional. It looks rather complicated, but it has the same, same kind of, it's of the same nature as the functional we have seen previously, where these Lobachevsky functions, they don't much don't differ that much from Dye logarithms. Yeah, so it's more or less the same functions. Anyway, that's a functional. Yeah, so given in terms of these new variables u we are looking for, and if you vary this function with respect to ui, you get the difference of these two thetas. One is your theta you have you obtain here, theta tilde, and theta hat you see here is your desired one. Yeah? So this is zero if and only if it's a variational problem to solve this mapping problem. So this new lens solve mapping problem if and only if this u is a critical point of the functional. And an amazing thing is, again, the convexity of this functional. So this is a very deep property. So it's another formula for the same functional. Again, here you have lens, x are logarithms of the corresponding lens, and alphas are the angles of this triangle. So take this, differentiate with respect to u, you see that you get exactly the difference between the thetas. So this is strictly S is strictly convex. Unfortunately, the domain is not convex because of these triangle inequalities you have to deal with. So the solution is unique if it exists, and one finds it by minimizing S of u, but the existence is slightly more difficult problem. So how much time do I have? 10 minutes? Ah, okay. So, okay, and this seems to be an interesting problem, and now I will maybe explain you why did we have such nice properties as, for example, the computer, the right dimension of the modular space. Yeah? So why it's a punctured surface of genus G. Well, the reason is mathematical, of course, yeah. So, because the same thing you can describe in terms of Möbius, in terms of hyperbolic geometry. So, this is our Euclidean triangle. But on the other hand, we can put it into a Klein model. So, that's the Klein model of hyperbolic plane. Then all the lengths become infinite. And you get a hyperbolic metric on the surface. And on the other hand, your surface becomes a surface with punctures. Yeah? Vertices go to infinity, and they are cusps. So now there is no wonder about the dimension of this Teichmuller space, because you have a Riemann surface of genus G, and all these vertices, they become cusps of your metric. So that's the same picture in the Poincaré model. And now we will come closer to this transformation, to the origin of the this conformal transformation we have seen. So take the horospheres, yeah, so which touch the unit disk here at the these infinity points of your polygon, of your ideal polygon, which you have here. So what you can do now, you can vary radii of these horospheres. So this length from here to here is an infinite length. But if you consider only this finite, only this part from this horosphere to this horosphere, then it's a final distance, final hyperbolic distance. And so they are shown here in red. And these are exactly our lambdas ij, because what happens with such lambda ij if you change the radius of this horosphere? So if the sphere becomes smaller here, then both these lambdas, which have to do with this vertex, get the same additional term. And this is exactly the transformation we have considers. And of course, this is well known. These are Penner coordinates and this logarithm of the cross ratio I have considered previously. They are Thurston Fock shear coordinates on this modular space. Okay, so now just another geometric interpretation in terms of 3D hyperbolic geometry. This has to do, of course, with the theory of three-dimensional hyperbolic polyhedra. And it's the same triangle, which you see here on the bottom. Now, you have 4 points at infinity, here, 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 and up there. And you introduce this horosphere, which are now, two-dimensional spheres. You cut off the corresponding piece of this polyhedron. And now these are the lambdas which we have introduced previously. You have lambdas with one index, with two index, and this length here. So let us observe that here on the top you have a plane which is parallel to this absolute plane. And therefore, the metric, this hyperbolic metric, restricted to this plane here, is just a Euclidean metric. So it's it has no curvature. So this triangle, which you see here, is a planar triangle. And that's the triangles we were interested in previously. So, and then, it's also a rather simple computation to show that this length here is given by this formula in terms of this finite length, lambda 3,1, and in terms of this vertical length you see here. And this is, again, the same transformation which we have seen previously. And that's another geometric interpretation for this. Okay, so now just a couple of final slides. I have explained you, this conformal matrix, discrete conformal matrix, and we have treated them as Euclidean triangles. So, and the goal was, of course, to obtain flat surfaces. So you obtain surfaces gluing these triangles together, and then if you know that the sum of the corresponding angles is equal to 2 pi, then you have a flat surface. So if you want, so classically, this problem corresponds to the following problem. You have a metric, and then you find a metric which is conformally equivalent to the given one, which has curvature zero. So if you treat this problem globally on a compact surface, then you can find such a metric on a torus. So on the sphere, you should look for a metric with a constant positive curvature. If you have a surface of higher genus, a genus greater than one, then you should look for a metric which has negative, constant negative curvature. And then, of course, it's quite natural to represent the corresponding triangles as hyperbolic triangles. So what you can do now, you can play exactly the same game as we did, but replace these triangles with the angles alphas given in terms of the corresponding metric, which we have computed in Euclidean way, by the angles of the corresponding hyperbolic triangles. For example, if you know three lengths of a hyperbolic triangle, then, of course, you can compute its angles. And then the condition will be that, again, as we have previously, the sum of these angles is equal to 2 pi at interior vertex, and then you can play exactly the same game. It's a variational problem. The functional is convex. And this allows you to uniformize surfaces of genus greater than 1, because you have such a surface, for example. It's a surface of genus 3. What you can do now, you treat this surface as a discrete surface. You even see this, that it's really a discrete surface. And then you solve the corresponding discrete problem. You compute the metric, which is conformally equivalent in this setup, with this condition satisfied. Then you have all these hyperbolic triangles, which you can map to a hyperbolic plane, and that's what you get. So then you can compute the corresponding hyperbolic group, this finite group, which, this finitely generated group which corresponds to the surface. And this is a classical uniformization, classical setup of the uniformization. You have found the metric which is conformally equivalent to this one with constant negative curvature. So that's the corresponding uniformization picture in the hyperbolic plane. And here, you can, for example, put some texture to this plane and project it back to your surface, and that's what you get here. You see it's a conformal picture because here you have a sort of square grid, and, of course, we have started with a square grid here in the hyperbolic plane. Yeah, so these are some references. Yeah. So, and more detail you can find in these papers and in a new book on discrete differential geometry and on especially in integrable structures in discrete differential geometry. So thank you very much for your attention.
This problem of finding conformally equivalent metrics for the surfaces, is it an integrable system? So the
I think it's quite similar to the case with circle patterns. Yeah? So there is a special combinatorics if you start with quad graph, and with a special quad graph, then I think it's an integrable system. But I think that's not yet investigated.
Suppose you have a spin system like Bajanov had, and then if you put it on this on a graph, arbitrary graph, then as far as I understand, you need to put it at the conformal point on the isoradial graph, I think. And then you could be, I mean, you could get some kind of continuous limit for that kind of things. My question is, if you have something like highly anisotropic spin system, then is there any algorithm to find the corresponding rhombus embedding for that system?
What does mean highly anisotropic?
For example, suppose that you have an easing system, then easing system in the X and Y could have, you could put it on the square lattice and then you could mm-hmm. be, I mean, you can finally think about the continuous limit, but if in the Y direction is different than X, then you need to think about rectangular system. So you think about arbitrary anisotropic spin system then.
So I can tell what we have tried and what kind of result we can prove and we have proven, yeah? So about this convergence. So, well, you see this existence and uniqueness results, they hold true for general combinatorics. But if you would like to prove the convergence result, then we have seen that these integrable cases are, really the only one where now people have results about the convergence. So, for example, for these circle patterns, the convergence has been proved recently by Ulrike Bücking in the case of these isoradial graphs. And the result for general setup is still missing, and I don't know what are exactly the conditions for the convergence. So probably one can find some generalization where you can still have the convergence, but it's not yet clear.
The actions which you construct, these discrete actions which you minimize, in the continuum limit, do they look like Liouville theory or some? There are some integrable, continuous integrable models behind it, probably, yes? And as a second question, can you inject more of degrees of freedom into it and still be discrete? Like coloring of the surfaces, maybe, which would correspond to the actions which have some extra fields, extra degrees of freedom?
Well, I think it's Liouville in the smooth limit, so that's true, but I don't know about these generalizations. Yeah. So I do believe that you can, for example, introduce some consingularities and there are some things which are quite natural geometrically, but I don't know exactly.
Very interesting.
So beta equations in general have many solutions, but somehow I suppose you put some extra conditions to have a unique solution. And
no, I don't think so. So, it depends on the signature of your model. Yeah. So I don't know exactly what kind of which model corresponds to this circle packing problem exactly. Yeah. So, but I think that I heard a talk by Volodya Kazakov where he investigated this model and he had a sort of unique solution to these beta equations. So I don't remember exactly the signature of it. Yeah. So. Which was it? But that's a general equation. It's not a special solution, but a special signature.
So I have a question. Suppose you have a planar graph, say a triangulation with equilateral triangles mm-hmm. of certain of some topology, some genus. Mm-hmm. Can you? You can actually define the moduli parameters for this graph.
Moduli parameters of...
That is, if it's a torus, I mean the modulus of the torus, for example. Just as a function of the connectivity matrix.
I see. So you take these triangles and glue them together,
yes,
again and get the metric, yeah, for,
yes,
for yourself.
Yes.
Yeah. So okay. Well, and then you get a polyhedral metric on a torus. Yeah. With so, and then the question is, what is the modulus? Yeah.
Yes.
Of this torus. So. It's a little bit different problem than the problem I have considered because, well, it's a continuous problem, yeah, what you are looking at. But what we can do,
It is not continuous, it is discrete. Because you have just the connectivity matrix of a trivalent planar graph.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's all.
I understand, yeah. So if you compute this modulus of the torus by the method we do, it will be close to the modulus of this classical torus you are going to consider. Yeah. So, and if you triangulate, if you subtriangulate your triangulation, then it will be converging, I think. So, but that's there is no theorem about this.
Thanks. Maybe we will discuss later.
Okay.
No more questions. So let's thank the speaker again.